Good luck, my love.
Thank you. My name is Polly Pistol, and I'm an alcoholic. By God's grace, in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since April the 11th of 1977, and for that I am eternally grateful. Woohoo! I have a home group, and that's a third legacy group in Bellingham, Washington. We're going to do the Friday night deal. You don't think so? Try it. So we started off with a bad mic. We're going to end with it. So my home group is a third legacy group in Bellingham, Washington. We meet on Monday night at 7 o'clock. And if you're in Bellingham, Washington, I just invite you to come to the best meeting in Bellingham, Washington. And I have a sponsor, and her name is Dottie H. And I am so grateful that those things are a part of my life today. I am so thrilled to be here. And Craig, thank you so much. Thank you for calling and inviting me. And he kept the secret that Greta and Alan were going to be my host and hostess. I kept calling him, and he wouldn't answer. He wouldn't call me back. And I'm like, what is wrong with him? So I called Bob Darrell and I said, who's picking me up at the airport? Does anybody even know when I'm coming in? You know, nobody's called. And so Bob says, don't worry about it. I gave him the itinerary and there'll be somebody there with a sign. So I'm riding on the little train, you know, from the gate to the baggage claim, and I get this phone call, and it's Greta. And she said, well, are you here? And I said, I just got off the little train, and I said, we're, you know, going down to baggage claim. And she says, well, we're at the hotel, so we'll see you when you get over there. And as I'm coming down the elevator, there's her and Alan. So that was really special because Greta and I moved from Southern California about the same time. Greta moved here, and Dave and I moved to Washington. So it's just, it's absolutely fabulous to be here. And I feel especially excited because I get to hook up with old friends. I feel like this weekend that it's like old home week because there's people that I sponsor that are now living in Las Vegas. I haven't seen Teddy in a while, and it was just wonderful to hook up with her. And I saw Harlan and Zan last night, and Harlan said he lives in Oregon. We see Harlan a lot. And I said, what are you doing here? And he says, well, I just came here to make sure you stay honest. So of course, it's all about me. He's been coming here for years. And it was wonderful to see Don. And you just were fabulous last night, Don. I just love you to pieces. And Don and I haven't bumped into each other for a while. He keeps showing up at the same time with my son, but I haven't seen him for a while. So, you know, it's all of those things. And you tell a story about what's happening now. And I love to know what's going on in people's lives. I just, you know, what I hear a lot of times, people will come up to me and they'll ask me about my two boys. And they said, well, we've listened to them grow up while you've been in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's because I'm going to tell you what it was like, but I really want you to know what's going on in my life today. Because I want you to know 28 years later that Alcoholics Anonymous is the biggest thing in my life and that I'm busy in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a baby here from Chicago. But seeing Southern California, Lisa, we call them babies. And in Chicago, they're very much more sophisticated. They call them sponsees. So I have to remember that because, and they do that in Bellingham too. So, you know, when I'm talking about a baby, they're like, what? You know, what are you talking about? So, I just kind of want to, give a little reflection, and I'm hoping that I'm just a little bit, teary this morning because 11 years ago, and I know exactly how many years ago it was, I stood here on a Sunday morning in Las Vegas and talked at this convention. And I will guarantee you, I was not the person 11 years ago that I am today. And I stood here with such a heavy heart that I didn't even know if I could talk that day. And I'm going to tell you what was happening. I didn't get here till Friday because we had gone to Chicago. My youngest son and his family lives in Evanston, Illinois. And we had gone there for Thanksgiving, and the committee was very gracious that they would let me come here Friday morning. So I came here on Friday, and it was really hard for me to be here because on that Wednesday before Thanksgiving, as far as I'm concerned, it's all, you know, there's no negatives in God's world. It's just my perception that's negative. But I thought on that Wednesday I had gotten the most devastating news that anybody could get. And that was on that Wednesday I found out that my 18-month-old grandson was profoundly deaf. And I thought, how can this be happening? And I know that James and Kelly and Dave and I sat around that day and we were just in tears. You know, how can this be happening to us? You know, at first we didn't understand God's plan. We didn't understand how it was going to unfold. And we sat there and said, how can this be happening? Here's four people who wanted a baby more than anybody in the world. And James and Kelly wanted that baby so bad. And Dave and I. And, you know, we sat there and said, you know, it's kind of one of those things where you get your fist at God and say, you know, life's just not fair. Ever said that? Life's not fair. And said, life's not fair. Because, you see, we wanted this little baby. And we said, gosh, look at all the people who have babies and don't even want them. And don't even want to take care of them. And their babies are born perfectly healthy. And our baby's born deaf. Why? And see, 11 years ago, we didn't understand that. And I came here that day with a heavy heart and not quite understanding what God had in mind. And I'm here again, 11 years later. I don't want to tell you that story. The story is very different today. Ryan's 12. Ryan is in 7th grade. Ryan is totally integrated into public school with an interpreter. And I'm telling you, I can't say enough about Las Vegas Convention that you have an interpreter. Because you know there's a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous who are deaf. And that little boy, my son called me on Wednesday as Dave and I were leaving, and he said, well, Ryan came home with his report card, and he made the honor roll again. And he is totally... Thank you. And he is totally integrated into public school. Now, I had a hard time in school, and I had no handicaps. But what I want you to know is that there's no negatives in God's world. And that Ryan is handicapped in no way. He's just deaf. And sometimes he has to work a little harder than other people. But I want to tell you what's the really big deal. What's the really big deal is his mom and dad are members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm here to tell you, when you have a child who has special needs, it takes a lot. But for James and Kelly, they have been relieved of the bondage of self. Because you see, when it comes to Ryan or their other two children, it never takes too much time. It never costs too much. They have been there 100% for this little boy because they came to you before they had the kids. And it's a miracle. It's an absolute miracle. And I just want you, if you're sitting here this morning and your heart is heavy and you were listening to Don last night and you've listened to Ann and you've listened to Kelly and Steve and to Jerome, and, you know, I don't have any of these. I'm not a really low bottom drunk as like they were. I don't get it. I mean, I'm just not that tough. You know, that's all there is to it. I am such a wussy drunk, I can't even stand it. Sometimes I wonder why they even ask me to come behind these podiums, because I'm always saying, well, I want a story like Greta. Man, I want to get beat up, and I want to hang out with all them people. I want to be running the streets, you know, running and gunning. And I'm just a little old wussy little somebody that just laid on the sofa and drank. And it just seems so lame. And but you know what? If you're new or you're nearly new, I'm just telling you, or if you're in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'll tell you, I'm going to talk more about the year of 1993 and 94, because I was 16 years sober. My husband Dave was 17 years sober, and our life unraveled. I mean, it came down, and we thought it was really coming down until we heard about Ryan, and then it really came down. And, but you know what? Somebody was talking about doing the stitch. Was that you, Don, doing the stitch? Who was doing the stitch? One of the speakers was doing the stitch. And, you know, all I know is if you just take the next step and do the next right thing and just don't leave and stay here and just keep going to meetings, and when you know God's gone and you know He's never coming back and He's never going to help you and He's never going to do anything for me and my life is never, ever, ever going to get better, if I'll just hang here, this too shall pass. All I know is that my AA sponsor tells me, and I have the most gorgeous woman for an AA sponsor, and I've watched Dottie walk through more adversity than any woman I know, and all I know is that if you just keep doing the deal, it gets better. It just absolutely gets better. And what happens is today I look back and I say, you know, those were just opportunities to grow. And I don't know about any of you, but I know for me, it just seems like that until I am in so much pain, and then that's when I'm down on my knees, screaming to the God of my understanding to help me. You know, most of the time it's like life is just going along, and then, you know, then the pain comes, and that's when I'm dusting off my big book and I'm starting to go to meetings and I'm calling a lot of people, because what's happened is I've just kind of slipped away from the source. Life got just a little too good, and I forgot how desperately I need God. And I loved it last night when Don talked about page 29. And I love that. I love that, because it tells in there that, you know, what I'm going to do today is I'm going to tell you my personal story from my own point of view. And I'm going to tell you how I formed a relationship with God. And you know, that's all this is about, is how I form a relationship with God. I'm going to go, you can go through the big book, page and passage, and it's things like, the main object of this book is to find a power greater than yourself. That what I'm supposed to do is to be of maximum, not a little bit, but of maximum service to God and those about me. That's my job. And a lot of people are coming to AA and they'll say, well, I don't get this spiritual thing. Well, you know, I really hate to disappoint you, but that's what it is. This is a spiritual malady with a spiritual solution. And one of the things, you know, I hear a lot of times, well, I can't do that God thing. I just can't do that God thing. And I just look at him, I put my arms around him, I said, sweetheart, if you can't do that God thing, you go on back out there and jolly barleycorn will have you on your knees and you'll do that God thing. You'll do that God thing. Because if you don't find God, that's what it's all about. And so if I offend you today and I'm making you squirm a little in your seat because I'm talking about that God thing, praise the Lord. Praise the Lord. I'm glad. Squirm. Just squirm. The The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that I should share in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what I'm trying to be like today. And I'm going to do that to the very best of my ability. I loved so many of the speakers that talked this weekend because, you see, I'm one of those speakers too. I am living, breathing proof that you can come to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and be a real alcoholic and not come from the disease of alcoholism. I do not come from the disease of alcoholism. I read a book not long ago. Well, really, it's, you know, I miss years. We were talking, I was talking with somebody about when Akron, and we were saying, oh, when was that? A year or so ago? Now we know it's 5 or 6 years ago. Who the hell knows? I mean, it's amazing. When you get old, time just goes, you know? But I read this book and it was called How It Worked. It's non-AA approved literature, but it's about the life of Clarence Snyder. And in that book, it talks about, at the very beginning, that there seems to be two characteristics that cause alcoholism. Not being loved enough and being loved too much. So, I love talk. After the meeting, we were talking with Jerome, and God, I've known Jerome since he's ahead of me in sobriety, but I've known him since I was 4 years sober. And, I used to work for a little treatment center down in Southern California, and Jerome was the EAP. And I used to go down there and try to get his sick people to come into my treatment center. And, we were just talking about, and I was just listening to him, we were just talking about, you know, a lot of us have issues. Don was talking about issues. And you know, if you got issues, I'm not up here to, I practice medicine without a degree. I am telling you right now, I do not do that. But one of the things that I believe with all my heart is that the only thing that has ever responded to the disease of alcoholism is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know of anything else. Now, you may be here and you got a lot of other stuff, because I know that a lot of people have a lot of other stuff. Just because we're alcoholic doesn't mean we don't get the other stuff. I mean, come on. My AA sponsor's just walking through cancer. Just because she's alcoholic and she's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't mean she don't have cancer. But somehow or another, we get really puffed up at Alcoholics Anonymous, and we think the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous can just take care of all of that. And you know it can, because what it does is it gives us, on page 133, it says that this program has given us great doctors and psychologists, and if you need them, go. That's what we do. And for that, I'm really grateful. At any rate, I am so ADD, I will be all over the map talking to you. You have no idea. And let me tell you, you can have that. You can be sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. You just have to be quick to keep up with me. That's all. You know, that's just the way it is. But I love that, talking with, this is the thing that has worked for me, is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So it doesn't matter what my issues are, because God knows I've had them, and I have sought help for those things. But in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I cannot do anything with me until I treat the disease of alcoholism. And that's what I've got. And I had no idea what an alcoholic was until I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want you to know that I did not know another alcoholic until I came here. Now, that's being pretty naive. But that's the truth. And one of the things I want to also tell you is, sorry, guys, but the smoke is killing me. My poor old throat just can hardly take it. At any rate, I'm raised up in this family, and I'm so grateful for the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, because one of the things that I've learned here is that a lot of times when I'm doing four steps and, well, fifth steps, after listening, when I'm listening to somebody's fourth step, one of the things that happens is that, you know, mom and dad are going to be on those fifth steps. when we get on the fourth step, when we're given our fifth step. Mom and Dad is always on there. And when I sit down to listen to an inventory, I always say, let me just tell you, before you tell me your story, why don't you tell me your mom and dad's story? Because 9 times out of 10, my story is nothing compared to my parents' story. And what I want to tell you today is my parents' story, a little bit. Because you see, even though I knew nothing about the disease of alcoholism, I do not come from that disease. My daddy died at age 60, and he had 60 years of sobriety. My mother just died in April, and she was 87 years old, and she had 87 years of sobriety. And I want you to know that my parents were not the least bit impressed with my sobriety. You see, their deal was, if you just wouldn't have drank that whiskey, you wouldn't have had those problems anyway. But what had happened for my parents are, and you know, I couldn't understand it. I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I came through treatment. Quite a few times I came through treatment. And, you know, if you go to treatment, you sit in group and you talk and everybody shares their stories. And I got to hear these stories about these horrific things that had happened to little boys and girls. But none of those things had happened to me. And I'd sit there in treatment and I'd say, well, I know why you're an alcoholic, but why am I an alcoholic? Because none of those things had happened to me. And today I know I'm an alcoholic because I have a disease of the soul. And what happens is one of the symptoms and the characteristics of alcoholism is low self-worth, low self-esteem, and just not being good enough. And I'm here to tell you, 28 years later, a symptom of alcoholism is low self-esteem, low self-worth, and just not being good enough. But you know what I know today is that I got a remedy for that. I've got the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, the 12 concepts, a group of people that just absolutely love me to pieces, and I love them back, a loving God that teaches me how to take some actions that every speaker has talked about this weekend. And if I want self-esteem and self-worth and all of those good self things, the only thing I'm going to get it, the only way I'm going to do it, is to go do an unesteemable act. If I don't go do something for you, I will not get better. Because you see, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is pretty clear. It tells me I am to have constant thoughts of others. And I don't know if you're a real alcoholic, but if you're a real alcoholic, that statement is huge. It is absolutely huge. Because you see, my whole life, it's always been about me. And as my AA sponsor likes to tell me, you see, I didn't think I was, you know, full of ego and pomp. I didn't think I was that. Because, you see, I just hated myself. And I just didn't like anything about me. And I was constantly trying to take my life. And she just looked at me with so much love. And Dottie says, you know something, Polly? It's not necessary you think well of yourself. The problem is you think only of yourself. And that was me. It was all about me. And I had these parents. And these parents loved me so much. But my parents are two abused children. And my parents were just like an alcoholic and an Al-Anon. They just found each other. And what happened was, is they desperately, desperately tried to make me feel fabulous. They told me on a daily basis how much they loved me. And my parents didn't have a lot of money. But I watched my parents sacrifice and work and give me dancing lessons and make sure that I was involved in everything in school. And we didn't have money, so my mother, I was a latchkey kid when it wasn't even popular. I mean, when I was a little girl, mothers did not work, but my mother worked. And my mother would work so that she could give me the things that other girls had in school. And she would stay up all night making me clothes and dancing costumes and all of the things that I, so I could have what other people had. And all of that, I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I would have sworn nobody loved me. Absolutely nobody loved me. But you see, what I know today is that you cannot give that which you do not have. And you see, my parents didn't have any self-worth, and they didn't have any self-esteem, and they felt less than. And as much as they told me how much they loved me, I couldn't feel it. Because they could not pass on what they do not have. And the big book is really clear about that. It tells me that I have to love God, clean house. Because if I don't do those things, I cannot pass on that which I do not have. And those are the necessary things for me to do. I am also an only child. So I had all of their attention and their affection. So today I know that the disease of alcoholism is a disease. And I can tell you right now that I am really grateful that I come from a non-alcoholic family. Because I am here to tell you, if I had had one excuse that I could have made it somebody else's fault, I wouldn't be here today. Because I am one of those people that have never, ever wanted to take responsibility for myself. I have never wanted to do that. I'm here to tell you, I am Southern, born and raised. I grew up in Texas. And I tell you what my belief was, that life was about money, men, and mansions. And that's what it was. And that men were put on earth to take care of women. That was the deal. And I was kind of one of those people that, in Texas, we call it puffing up. You know how when you just kind of puff up? And somebody says, what's wrong? Nothing. But the truth is that you are supposed to guess what's wrong with me and fix it. And if you don't, you don't love me. And Clancy says that we're people who have to be treated special just to feel average. And if you don't feel, and if you don't treat us special, then we feel rejected. And I understand that. You see, I just need more. And today I know that I have a disease called alcoholism and that I am suffering from a spiritual malady. I am suffering from a disease of the soul. And you know what? That's why all that psychobabble just don't work for people like you and me. What I need is I need to grab a hold of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I need to find a God of my understanding. And I need to go out and I need, as my friend Frank Hennicutt used to say, I need to go help somebody. And if I don't go help somebody, I'm going to die here. I'm going to absolutely die. Because the thing about it is a psychiatrist and a psychologist is going to tell me, Polly, do it for you. You need to take care of you. And you know, me doing the best job I could do to take care of me got me a seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it wasn't until I started caring about you and I started seeing what I could do for you. Because you see, I have a spiritual malady. And the only way I'm going to heal from a spiritual malady is to reach out and help you. And by helping you, I get to help me. Now, I don't know how that works. I haven't got a clue how that works. All I know is that it works. Now, I knew about God when I was a little girl. Because, see, I was raised in a Baptist church. I don't know if anybody's Southern Baptist around here. But I was raised Southern Baptist, right down in Texas where they took the Bible Belt and gave it an extra pull. And I saw my friend Ron this morning. And a long time ago, he told me it was in 1988, Ron gave me a tape, a Clancy, called Alcoholism, a Disease of Perception. And you know, that's when I knew I had a disease of perception. And Don talked about that last night. You know, I just don't see things the way they really are. My perception of reality is distorted. And you know, I used to sit in that church with those preachers, and they just scared the bejesus out of me. You know, they'd get up on behind these podiums and they'd slam their fists on the podiums and their faces would get red and their veins would stick out, and they'd lean into the congregation and they'd say things like, "If you've thought it, you've done it." Well, I don't know about you, but I was an alcoholic in the making and I thought a lot. And what happened was, is they started to tell me things like, "You're going to burn in hell. You're born a sinner." Well, I'm telling you, when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and they tell me, "You better find God," I'm telling you, I'm sitting there saying, "Listen, you don't understand. God's trying to kill me. He's been trying to kill me for a long time." You know, I forgot about all that stuff about, you know, how much God loves me. I never heard that because, you see, I have a disease of perception. And I don't hear anything but the negative. You know, there's an old song that was around when I was young. Most of you never heard it in your life, but it was called "Accentuate the Positive, Eliminate the Negative." Well, an alcoholic accentuates the negative and eliminates the positive. If it's good, I'm going to get rid of it. That's just the way my head thinks. If it's good, it's gone. And I didn't know anything about God. I was afraid of God. God was here to get me. I also am sensitive. I don't know if any of you are sensitive. And a man reminded me of this last night. And I haven't talked about this in a long time, but I'll tell you, it was a tough thing to get over. You know, it was, now I just have so much fun with it, I can't hardly stand it. But it was hard for a lot of years. And that is, I'm a person who doesn't like to be teased. I love it now. But I didn't used to like to be teased. I was one of those sensitive. I mean, I needed a drink a long time before I took a drink. And my name is Polly. I'm not a Pauline or a Paula. I'm a Polly. And if you're a little girl and your name's Polly, you're going to be teased a lot. It's going to be things like, "Polly wants a cracker. Polly Wally doodle all the day." And I couldn't stand it. Hurt my feelings bad. And I didn't really get over it when I got sober. I just wished I was anything but a Polly. Because, you know, as soon as somebody'd see me, they'd go, I'd say, "Hi, my name's Polly. You want a cracker?" And I mean, if you're sensitive and you got alcoholism, that ain't funny. I just ain't funny. 3.5 years into sobriety, I marry Dave. His last name's Pistol. My name's now Polly Pistol. I sound like I ought to have tonsils walking down the streets of Sunset Boulevard. You know, it don't get better. It gets worse. And I found out God's got a sense of humor. That name bother you? Gonna make it worse, baby cakes. You're gonna get over that sensitivity one way or another. I love my name. My husband, he's the one that read the prayer. That cute little guy, and you know, with that night light that stood up here in the yellow. That's my husband, Dave. And he's right. He says, "You know what? If you didn't have that name, nobody'd remember you." God's got a sense of humor. 18 years old, I married an Air Force officer. I knew I'd found my knight in shining armor, and I was just going to sail off into the sunset and live happily ever after. I'd married a SAC pilot. And this man was going to be gone, and he was going to be gone for years at a time, and I was going to have to learn to be responsible for myself, and I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to be responsible for myself. And I'm here to tell you, I have never known how to suit up and show up for life. I did not know how to do that until I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous 28 years ago. I could not suit up and show up for life. And I did not know how to do that. And I'm married to this man for a couple of weeks, and I get an invitation in the mail, and it's from the base commander's wife. And it's an invitation, and I'm supposed to attend a coffee. And you see, I don't want to go to this coffee because I'm 18 years old. I don't have a college education. And I'm here to tell you today I still don't. And I used to use that for an excuse for a long time, that I'm stupid. But you know, I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous in the 12 and 12, it talks about seven deadly sins. And I got one bad. And it's called slothing. And you see, I've always wanted those letters after my name. I just never wanted to go to school. You see, I'm one of those people who want the title, but I don't want to do the work. And I was scared to go there. Because you see, I knew. I'm an alcoholic. I know things. I knew that these women were going to be sophisticated and they were going to be educated. And I was this little 18-year-old, uneducated, unsophisticated, you know, hick from Texas. And I'm going to go to this coffee. And I am so overwhelmed with feelings of inadequacy that I think I am going to die. And I go to this coffee. And this lady stands up behind a podium just like I am, and all of us little second lieutenant's wives are sitting out here. And that morning she began to tell us what our responsibility was to our husband's career. And that what we were going to do in the military to enhance his career. You know, we were going to go to the right functions, and we were going to have the right dinner parties and go to the right dinner parties. And we would dress appropriately. We would wear the right length gloves. All the things that we were going to do in order to be an Air Force officer's wife in good standing. And I can't do this. I am too terrified. You see, I didn't know till I came to be with you that I'm driven by 100 forms of fear. I don't know. I don't understand that then. All I know is what an order. I can't go through with this. I am too scared. And 2 weeks later, I took a drink of alcohol. And it wasn't a big deal. And I got to meet all these people. And by now, I know a lot of people in the Air Force. And you know, I'm thinking that Baptist church lied to me. They told me people who drank were bad. And these people were not bad. These were good people. And they drank alcohol. And I took a drink of sherry. And I'm here to tell you no magic happened, to my knowledge. My husband talks about when he took his first drink, you know, it went down to the ends of his fingers and down to the tips of his toes. And all of a sudden he was 6'2". His red hair turned brown and his freckles fell off. That's what happened to Dave. I didn't know what happened to me at the time. All I knew was is I took a drink of alcohol and I could just breathe. I could just breathe. I could just take a breath. And what I did for the next 17 years is I took a drink of alcohol just so I could breathe. Because you see, if I drank, I didn't have any social skills. And you know, I come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and if you're new and you're sitting out there and you say, oh my God, that woman standing up there behind the podium and she's talking, how do you get to do that? You just sit around these rooms. Honey, I'm the kind of person that couldn't get up in front of my class and give a book report. I was so terrified of people. I was so scared. I couldn't do that. Alcoholics Anonymous gives me the ability to do things I could never do. Because you see, today I don't do it. Today God does it. I don't do it. Because in and of myself, I am so scared and I am so intimidated of you, I can't take a breath. And I hyperventilate and I have panic attacks because I am so scared. And you see, I didn't understand. Everybody was telling me what alcohol was doing to me. But they never understood what it did for me. And I didn't understand either until I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and you gave me the big book. And in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it talks about the doctor's opinion. In the doctor's opinion, it talks about what alcohol did for me. It gives me that feeling of ease and comfort. Because if I had a drink of alcohol, I could breathe. I could just breathe. Along about 1962, we're stationed in a place called Loring Air Force Base, Maine. It is the very tippy top of Maine. I've got two little boys, and I do not have a clue how to be a parent. And these two little boys are driving me crazy. I can't send them out to play because it's 50 below zero. And these little boys, are just driving me crazy, and I'm having a nervous breakdown every 20 minutes. And I end up going to an Air Force doctor, and he says, take these. And from 1962 until 1977, I took Librium and Valium and Seconal and Nimitol and drank alcohol. And I'm here to tell you, if you take those kind of drugs and drink alcohol, you are not an active alcoholic. That's why I keep telling y'all, I am not a party girl. I am one of the people that did all my affairs sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I just died on my living room sofa. I just laid there and listened to Joan Baez and watched soap operas. That was my life. In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, we have a chapter, and it's called The Family Afterwards. And I think this chapter is so important. Because, you see, I'm gonna talk about the family. Because I am a mother standing here today in Las Vegas that should never have been able to have my children. Because, you see, I am a child abuser. I am a child abuser in every way. I have abused my children emotionally, physically, and spiritually. People like me today do not get to keep their children. Women like me today are locked up for what I did to my children because I am a child abuser. And I am so grateful for strong sponsorship. I am so grateful for people to get in my face and tell me the truth, whether I want to hear it or not. And I am so grateful for that kind of sponsorship. And when I got sober, my first AA sponsor was a man. And you know what? God gives us exactly what we need. And Frank was an only child. Frank was a priest. Frank was a captain in the Navy. Amazing. Because, you see, I just knew what was wrong with me was because I was an only child. And I just knew what was wrong with me was the U.S. Air Force. And here I meet a man, and I knew what was wrong with me was that Baptist church. And here this man came into my life and began to spoon feed me the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I got through with my fifth step, Frank looked at me, and Frank had a way of telling the truth. He didn't do watered down AA. He did the truth. And I'm here to tell you, I don't do watered down AA. I believe it is a gift, and it is only through God's grace that we get the ability to tell the truth. And let me tell you what the magic is. You know, there's the truth out there, and we can beat somebody to death with it. But Frank used to tell me, Polly, if you tell the truth and you tell it with love, people can hear. Because, you see, this is the language of the heart. This is where the heart speaks and the heart listens. And Frank looked at me and he says, Polly, you are a child abuser. And you are going to go to your sons and you're going to make amends. And when you go to your sons, you're not going to say things like, you know, I'm so sorry that that happened to you. Because he says they're going to say things, they're going to have some stuff to say to you. You see, when I got sober, my sons were 14 and 16 years old. I had drugged them through alcoholism. They were 14 and 16, and they were really angry. They were very angry. And they had a lot to say to me. And Frank says, when they tell you how they feel, you don't get to say to them, you know, you shouldn't feel that way. I'm sober today. You just tell them how sorry you are that you're a child abuser and that you're going to do whatever you can to be the very best mom from this day forward. And you know, I hear a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous and they talk about, you know, I can't, you know, I'm my kids this and they don't do this for me. And you know what? They don't need to. In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, in the family afterwards, it talks about the head of the household. Now, I know Bill meant the alcoholic, but he said he calls it the head of the household. He says, caused most of the problems. And because of that, I will not even the score in this lifetime. So you see, it's not about what they do for me. It's about what I do for them. I'm going to tell you some stories, two stories about my sons. My sons have been traumatized by a disease called alcoholism. My sons suffer from no self-worth, no self-esteem, and just not good enough. Because you see, they have a disease called alcoholism. And I got one who's got the disease by drinking. And I got another one who's got the disease by just being around it. And one of the things that I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is you can die from the disease of alcoholism and you never have to take a drink. That's what happens in alcoholic homes. This is a family disease. And anybody who lives with a practicing alcoholic is affected by the disease of alcoholism. I used to take those drugs and drink that alcohol. And sometimes I don't talk about how much I took. But I took probably at least 20 tablets a day and drank a quart of vodka a day. And I did that for a long time. And I stayed unconscious a lot. And many is the time I've come to with my oldest son, screaming at me, "Mom, wake up, are you dead?" And me to come to and see that fear in his eyes. And you know something? I haven't had to come to and see that kind of fear in anybody's eyes for 28 years for something I'm doing. And for that, I've been overpaid. My youngest son is a member of this program. A good member. Loves AA. And James, I get to hear James talk at the podium. Hard, it's hard sometimes to listen because he has to tell his story. And you see, I'm a part of his story. And James talks about a little boy. And he talks about how you can shut those feelings down. And it doesn't matter how much it hurts. You don't ever feel it. You just don't feel it. And he talks about being a little boy. And you see, I don't put my kids to bed anymore. And I don't wake them up in the morning to get them off to school. Because I can't. You see, I'm an alcoholic. And I'm passed out, and I can't get up. And so my little boys have to take care of themselves. And you see, their dad's gone, so they don't have a dad either. And they're living with a practicing alcoholic. And James talks about getting up one morning, and his mother's passed out on the floor in the kitchen. That's often. His mother's passed out on the floor in the kitchen. And he steps over her, gets the milk, gets his cereal, gets a bowl, steps back over her, sits down at the table and starts to eat and feels nothing. That's the disease of alcoholism. I am so grateful to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous because you know what's the good news? Is that our kids are so forgiving. They're so forgiving. And because I took some actions that I didn't believe would work, because I went and made amends to those boys, not believing it would work, I have a relationship today with my sons that is beyond my greatest expectation. And you know what? Every time I do something that I don't believe is going to work, take an action contrary to the way I feel, I was listening to Don last night, those feelings. Don't worry about your feelings. Just stand still. They'll move in a minute. They'll go away. Just go take an action. Just go take an action. You'll take an action. It'll change your feelings. Because what it really changes is your thinking. And when our thinking's changed, then our feelings are changed. I'm going to tell you what brought me to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I just laid there. and I'm going to do this really quick. I ended up in three treatment centers. The first treatment center I was brought to, I had a wreck in Irving, Texas. It's Irvine, California. Irving, Texas. And I'm a blackout drinker, and I called the police, told them my car was stolen. Here comes the police with my husband, da-da-da-da. And several people have talked tonight, this weekend, about that look. You know that look of people who love us, people who don't even know us, who don't understand us, just that look, that look. Well, I saw that look in that policeman that day, in that non-alcoholic who just doesn't understand why we do the things we do. And this policeman said, you know, to my husband, why don't you just take her home and sober her up? And I went to a treatment center that night. He said, there's one close to our house, and I wish you would go. Now, this was a county detox. And I entered this treatment center, and they started taking us to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was a 7-day detox. And I fell in love with the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a fellowship of attraction. You know what? I can preach those 12 steps and I can preach those 12 traditions, but if you're a newcomer and you're walking into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you don't have a clue what's hanging on that wall. What you want to know is, why are those people laughing so much? What have they got to laugh about? And you know, I believe that this is a program of attraction, and I want to be an attraction to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I fell in love with the laughter. But I didn't believe I was a real alcoholic. You know, people like me, don't you understand? I'm an Air Force officer's wife. People like me don't become alcoholic. My parents aren't alcoholic. You kept talking about your parents being alcoholic. People like me don't become alcoholic. And so while I was in that treatment center, I had a Jitterhouse romance. You know, where sick falls in love with sick and you walk off into happy destiny. I got 12-stepped out of a motel in Euless, Texas. And I got brought back into that treatment center. And I'd been beaten up and numerous and sundry other things. And I'd reached that place in the big book that talks about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Because, you know, now I knew what the problem was. The problem was sobriety. And you know, on that tape, Clancy talks about alcoholism, a disease of perception. You know what happens to me when I quit drinking? Without alcohol, I can't face life. I can't do life without alcohol. It's just too hard. I can't. When I'm not drinking, I can't live with who I am. I can't live with the mother I've become and the wife I've become and the daughter I've become. And I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that men hate what they've done and women hate what they have become. And I hated what I had become. And I knew that there was no way I could live sober inside my own skin. I couldn't live with what had happened to me in that motel room. And what I did is I left that treatment center and I got a bottle of scotch and I got a bottle of Valium and I checked into a motel. And I don't believe that there's anybody sitting in this room that doesn't have an angel in your life. Someone who leads us to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had such a woman in my life. And she knew nothing about the disease of alcoholism, but she loved me. And she said that day something came over her. And I know today that that something was God working in my life through her. And she drove around and she found my car parked outside this motel. And I had just walked in the room and the door was still ajar. And she pushed the door open and she found me laying there. And on April the 8th of 1977, I was pronounced dead on arrival in a hospital in Bedford, Texas. It is by God's grace. And I know today by Webster's Dictionary what grace is. And it is a gift. It is by the gift of sobriety that I am here today. I know today that I have a gift. And our daily reflection, it says that sobriety is God's gift to me. What I do with my gift, what I do with my sobriety is my gift back to God. This is grace, folks. This is grace. Because you know, everybody who walks into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is handed the gift. Most people lay it on the chair and walk out. It is by the gift. For whatever reason, and I know that that's a gift too, is that I picked up the gift. I have heard from in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that we are the chosen ones. Well, I don't think I'm chosen. What makes me better than the guy laying out in the gutter? God loves him as much as he loves me. What about the person who walks in here, has the gift, lays it down, and walks out again? You want a heartbreak? Want a heartbreak? Watch somebody you love lay it down and go back out again. And you're so powerless. My dilemma is a lack of power. I can't help them. I cannot help them. The gift. God's grace. Take the gift and know it's mine. God's grace. Keys to the Kingdom. One of the beautiful stories in our book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is God's pleasure to give me the kingdom. It's His pleasure. He wants me happy. He wants me. And in the family afterwards. Sometimes a lot of people go to page 83 because it's kind of like, you know, the steps they think kind of stop there. How about in the family afterwards when it says we absolutely insist on being happy, joyous, and free? God wants me to laugh. God wants me to share. The magic of Alcoholics Anonymous, one alcoholic sharing with another alcoholic. The gift. I also got a gift. My husband went to a Fort Worth judge, and in 1977, wasn't any different in 2005. They didn't take kindly to people who try to commit suicide. And I got one of those little 72-hour holds, which was enough time for my husband to obtain a court order from a Fort Worth judge that said I was a detriment to myself and others, and I was court-committed to treatment. And I walked into that treatment center on April the 11th of 1977. And by God's grace, in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that if we are spiritually fit, that great events will come to pass. That's the great fact for us all. And I want you to know that I want to share with you my great events. For the past 28 years, life's been in session. And I'd love to tell you, I'd just love to sit down. You know, you sit down and say, I got sober. Everything's great. Got money. Got the man. Everything's great. And everything is great. But it didn't work like that. Life's been in session, and I want to share that with you. When I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was told by my sponsor, if you've got 5 minutes of sobriety, you share it with another alcoholic. Get busy. A lot of people say, I can't work my four step. I can't do the steps. I don't want to get it going too fast because I might get drunk. Well, I don't know where we get that. Bill did it in Towns Hospital in a few hours, but I don't know why we think we have to wait all this time. You know what? You go do the steps and then you go sponsor. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous does not talk a lot about sponsorship. It is a manual to teach us how to sponsor. It is a manual that we study. It is a textbook. I study that book today. I love that book. And at 28 years of sobriety, they still keep hiding things in it. I just don't get it. But I know today that if you have whatever amount of sobriety you have, I know that there's new people in it. We're going to do a countdown and we're going to find them. But I know that there's new people here today. And you know what? You hurry up and do your steps. Because if you do them and you get to live in 10, 11, and 12, and you know, it takes a long time to do step 9. And I don't know how you work the steps. I mean, it's not my business. But when I do steps with people and it was the way it was done to me, I write a four step. I go see my sponsor. I give her or him, in my case it was a him, my fifth step. We do 6, 7, 8, and he puts me on the road to 9, and I live in 10, 11, and 12, and I'm 3 months sober, and he says, you go get a sponsee. You're ready to sponsor. Because you know how I'm going to stay sober? It's not being sponsored, it's sponsoring. That's how I'm going to stay sober. Because this is the language of the heart. This is where the heart speaks and the heart listens. And how I stay sober is go help another alcoholic. That's how I do it. And you know, I hear all the time in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you come on in here and let us love you till you can love yourself. Well, let me tell you something, sugar. That is not the way I heard it. I was told, you come on in here and let us love you till you can love somebody else. And when you can love somebody else, you can begin to get the magic of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I already had it all given to me. And I still said, it's not enough. Nobody loves me. It wasn't until I began to love you that I began to feel the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm here to tell you, it didn't come, this big emotion didn't come over me, I love you. That didn't happen. How I learned to love you was do something for you. Can I get you a cup of coffee? Can I take you to a meeting? What can I do for you? You know, the deal is, I always was waiting for you to do it for me. And until I found out what the, magic was, I found the answer. Answer is not what you can do for me. The answer is, what can I do for you? When I was 3.5 years sober, I married another member of this fellowship. And he was the nightlight up here in the yellow shirt. October the 27th, Dave and I celebrated 25 years being married. That's a great event that's come to pass. Dave and I did not know how to have a marriage. I am Dave's fourth wife. And as Carol T., one of our Al-Anon friends, has many times told Dave, and you were the only common denominator in all four of those marriages. I'm the suffering kind. I stayed married 22 years. Dave and I did not know how to have a marriage. We knew how to take a hostage. We came to you, and we learned how to have a marriage. My AA sponsor had left the priesthood and married a Taiwanian woman, and he began to tell us, you know what, if you want to be happily married all the days of your lives, treat each other like a newcomer. How do we treat newcomers? Love, patience, and tolerance. I'm also a member of Al-Anon. I have an Al-Anon sponsor. And I used to go to woman and things like that with Sally, where it was AA and Al-Anon. And she'd open her suitcase. Albert's in the big meeting in the sky now, but she'd open her suitcase and she'd have all these love notes from Albert. And they were almost married 50 years. And I wanted to be married that long, and I wanted to have romance in my life. And I didn't know how to do that. How do you stay married 50 years and still be in love with your husband? And she said, she says, just a few magic words. She said, well, you know, Albert and Sally set us down. You want to know the magic words? I'm sorry. Please forgive me. I'm wrong. And you know what? I don't even have to be wrong. I just have to say it. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about amends, real or fancied. I just have to say I'm wrong. Then we met this couple down in Omaha, and Dick and Peggy said, why don't you let us tell you about working the traditions in your relationship? And I want you to know, 25 years later, I am so in love with my husband. And I am so grateful that I get to do this walk with him. And I know it's only because of you that I feel like that. Because there was no way that a woman like me knew how to do that. And I want to tell you a little bit about the woman I was in AA. When I came here, you see, I wanted somebody to love me. And I knew if you just love me enough, I'd be okay. And I had to hit a bottom in sobriety that was as devastating as the bottom I had hit behind alcohol and booze. And that was behind alcohol and drugs. And that was behind relationships and sex. Because, you see, I wanted you to love me. Now, Dave and I were friends. That's all we were, AA buds. And Dave happened to sponsor some of these guys. Dave knew more about me than he needed to know. And we used to say if we'd have known we were going to get married, we'd have never told each other the things we told each other. But I got a gift in August of 1980. And Dave looked at me and he says, "Polly, I'm in love with you." He said, "But you need to get something straight. I don't want to have an affair with you. I want to marry you." You see, things like that aren't supposed to happen to women like me. He loved me unconditionally. And he knew me and he loved me. The miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Dave and I had some stepkids. He had two, I had two. Put those four kids together, what an order. I can't go through with it. You want to put a little stress on a marriage? Put some stepkids in there. Worse than that, put three of them being alcoholics and drug addicts. And then have another one that's just plain crazy. Little stress on a relationship. Dave and I have had some huge financial problems. In 1993, the bottom fell out of aerospace. And Dave and I lost everything. And we lost our home. Dave lost his job. He didn't work really again for 2 years. Had two little minimum wage jobs. The world was not looking for a computer scientist, I tell you. And we didn't know what we were going to do. And we ended up filing bankruptcy, and our home was foreclosed on. And I thought I was going to die in sobriety. Because, you see, it's that humiliation. You know, step 7 talks about humility. I don't know about any of you, but I have never found an ounce of humility. But I know a lot about humiliation. And what happened is Dave and I lost it all. But you see, Dave had an AA sponsor, Frank Honeycutt, finest man I've ever known. And Frank, you know, I said, "Frank, what will people think of us if they find out we're filing bankruptcy?" And Frank said, "You know something, Polly, it's none of your business what people think of you. But your very life depends on what you think of them." My AA sponsor, who's had a lot of adversity in her life, she says, "You get up behind the podium and you tell the truth. You're not there to look good. You're there to share your experience, strength, and hope. And this is part of your experience." And I thought I would die. The most humiliating thing that had ever happened to us. And I thought I would die in sobriety. But you know what? You can live through it. You just keep doing the deal. You just keep doing what you're told to do and put one foot in front of the other and just go to the next meeting, get the next sponsee, set them down, work steps, go through the book. It's amazing. '93, we had that little grandson I told you about. '94, we found out he was deaf. I said, you know, it's just not going to get any worse than this. When I was 6.5 years sober, my youngest son called me on the phone and he said, "Mom, I want what you have." 6.5 years before, I was supposed to attend a function at his school, and he looked at me with enough hate in his eyes, and he says, "Don't you dare show up at my school because I am ashamed of you." And 6.5 years later, he wants what I have. And he married Kelly. James has 21 years of sobriety. January 30, he'll be 22 years sober. That's a great event that's come to pass. She's 16 years sober. James and Kelly have 3 children. You've taught them to be parents. They show up as parents. They show up as employees. They show up as parents. They show up as AA members. They show up because you taught them how to show up. Great events will come to pass. My oldest son, Sloppy. I understand, Russ. You see, I am one of these people that I know today that I live in an altered state of being. Because you see, I walked in this room this morning, and Ron said it all. Ronald said it all. Ronald said, Polly, you're working the room. Because I love AA, and I'm working the room. But I can guarantee you, without you, that's not me. Because you see, me without you is a woman who is depressed, who it came to you behind 3 suicide attempts, and the last one, I made it. I absolutely died from the disease of alcoholism. I was so depressed, I could not get out of bed. And suicide was an option for me for 8 years in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my oldest son is like me. I understand him. I understand him because you see, Russ is like me. He is a tormented soul. And I understand because Russ used to cut on himself and I used to cut on myself. Because you see, if you cut on yourself, I can handle that physical pain. It's that emotional insanity I can't handle. And I understood Russ. And my son Russ tried to take his life 7 times. My friend Teddy's sitting down there and she's held me and held me. Because I couldn't live in these rooms because my son was trying to kill himself. And you know why she understood? Because her kids were trying to kill themselves. And we held on to each other while our kids just tried to die. And I'm thinking, I can't do this sober. And I want to tell you about Russ today. See, I understood Russ because, you see, that's me. That's me without you. I had Russ's Al-Anon group picked out, had his Al-Anon sponsor picked out, knew who she ought to be. Russ married a Catholic girl. And Russ became a Catholic. You know, I'm so grateful Russ has a higher power and it's not me. I would have never thought of that. And that's what he does today. And Russ and Cheryl have 2 little girls. And Dave and I got to be a part of their lives until we moved to Washington 2 years ago. And in January, we were out in California, and I picked up Katie and Jesse after school. And Katie and I were walking to the car, and Katie's 9 years old. And Katie looked at me, and she says, Grandma, I want to be just like you. And I said, oh, thanks, Katie. And she says, I hear you on your cell phone, and you help people, and I want to be just like you. And you know that's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have 5 grandchildren. And I was a child abuser. And today, my sons leave their kids with me. In fact, my youngest son and his wife don't leave them with anybody but me. So I, from time to time, get to fly to Chicago and babysit my grandchildren so they can go take a little vacation. And my daughter-in-law says, nobody can take care of my kids but you, Polly. That's a gift. Great events will come to pass. A few years ago, we didn't have Maddie yet. James and Kelly came to Dave and I and said, Mom, we made a will. And if anything happens to Kelly and I, we want you to take the boys. 6 months later, Russ and Cheryl came to Dave and I and said, Mom, if anything happens to Cheryl or I, we want you to take the girls. Here is a mother who abused her children. But because of you, they allow me to have their most precious cargo, their children. Great events. Just show up. Just show up. Dave and I lost all that, you know, lost that house and all that stuff. And so we didn't have, it's great. When we go to Washington, what I say to them is, don't hate me. I did not have a big old house in California to sell to come up here and screw up your economy. So don't hate me. Dave and I didn't have that. We rented all those years until we left California. But Dave and I found out that if you save your money, it'll grow. And so Dave and I worked hard, and we saved our money, and we got to retire 2 years ago. And it's the greatest thing that's ever happened. I get to hang out with my soulmate and my best friend and my lover. And sometimes I just have to pinch myself. I say, I don't know how you get from here to here. I don't know how you do that. But Dave and I live in Birch Bay, Washington. It's total Hooterville. 1,900 people. Then up the road, the biggest, you know, well, not the biggest city, because we're only 30 minutes from Vancouver, B.C. But we go to meetings in Bellingham, and it's about 60,000, so it's pretty Hooterville, too. And Dave and I have a house that looks out over the ocean. Eagles sit in trees. Kind of, and I've always thought that eagles were, you know, sent from God. And we get to live like that. And I don't know how you get from here to here. All I know is, if you just suit up and show up and do the deal, it works. I don't know how it works. I just know it works. God bless you. I love you.